Let's all go to the lobby. 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 Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Shakedown, the weekly podcast that functions as a grab bag for all things film. I'm your host, Kyle Craigbaum.
And I'm your other host, Jordan Dennis.
And this week, we are closing out 2021.
We did it! We survived!
With our first annual Shaky Awards.
Yeah! Everyone wants to win a Shaky.
So we are going to be going over our personal best and worst lists of the year.
Top 10 worst, top 20-ish best.
And
like around there.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good movies this year. And then we are going to be telling you what you guys decided.
You voted on the winners of the Shaky Awards, so we'll tell them you who'll be shaking a leg tonight. This is the award to win, I think. This is a lot of people talk about these Oscars, these Golden Globes and shit, like the fucking Gotham Awards. Nah, man, this is it.
Nah, there's no tourist winning at our
Yeah, exactly.
Our
no, award nah, show. No. Johnny Depp ain't gonna win shit.
Never. So, do you want to get started?
Sure, let's do our worst lists.
Our worst lists.
Get the fucking stinkers out of the way.
So do you want to go like 10-10? How about I go 10 through 6, you go 10 through 6, 5 through 2, 5 through 2, and then we both say our number one worst film of the year.
Alright.
Yeah? So how about you start with your number 10 through number 6 worst films of the year.
Okay, so a lot of these back six, I surprisingly don't have a lot to say about. They're kind of like the forgettable half of the bad movies. Coming in at number 10, my best worst movie of the year would be Resident Evil. Welcome to Raccoon City. An absolute bore. Just a snooze fest through and through. It's not a particularly badly like made movie. Like, it looks fine and everything. Some of the practical effects are kind of gnarly, but in its effort to be faithful to the games, it does so in such like a mishmashed, messy kind of way that's just not compelling at all. And number 9, my 9th worst movie of the year, probably one of my biggest disappointments of the year, and I think that'll definitely reflect in our award show later. Halloween Kills. What a fucking garbage pile. I have no idea what the fuck went wrong between the first movie and this one. Like, that is maybe the biggest downgrade between predecessor and sequel in years. A massive step down in quality. Like, this is the opposite of whatever the fuck happened between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. This is the exact opposite. Fucking repugnant movie. Yes. At number seven... I have motherfucking Home Sweet Home Alone. You warned me not to watch this movie. Or it's number 8, I guess. I forgot how to count.
Yeah.
Number 8, Home Sweet Home Alone. You warned me not to watch this movie, and I did it anyway, because I wanted to watch something in the Christmas spirit, and I was like, I don't really love the original Home Alone, but I don't, like, hate it. So I'm kind of like, you know, maybe this one will be all right. I was so wrong. I could not have been wronger. This movie is painfully unfunny, super predictable, just really pandering in like a dumb way. It's like they're jingling keys in front of you, like they think everyone watching is a dumb, stupid, smart-felling baby. And it's like the first one is like at least like clever and actually funny. So, you know, there's that. Yeah, Home Sweet Home Alone sucked. My 8th worst of the year. My 7th worst. A movie I think might be the most overrated movie of the year. Free Guy, starring Ryan Reynolds. What a fucking... It's just so dumb. It's just such a stupid fucking movie. It's not funny, and I'm so tired of Ryan Reynolds. I'm so sick of his dumb face. I would fight him live on air if he would agree to do that, because I think I'd win. It's fucking stupid and pandering. All of the references and jokes, it's just... again, it's like, oh, you like IPs? You like intellectual properties? You like other movies you've seen? Here's a lightsaber. Here's Captain America's shield. It's so, it's gruel. It's the cinematic equivalent of prison food.
It's like slop, yeah.
Yeah, it's just fucking, ugh, it's gross. And Jodie Comer is fine. She's like the one redeeming part. If Taika Waititi doesn't win a Razzie or get nominated, I will say he barely missed out on our worst performance of the year nominations. But I believe he does deserve a shout out. He's truly fucking awful in this movie.
And round it out with your number six.
My number six might honestly be my favorite movie on this list. Like, it might be the one I would go... It's the one I would go back and watch again the most. And that's Space Jam: A New Legacy. It sucks, but I think there's enough, like, it's harmless enough that I think I can laugh at it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very funny, like, in a bad way kind of movie. The whole egregious inclusion of references and other Warner Brothers property and just how so ungracefully mishandled it all is. And just some of the character assassinations they do for the Looney Tunes. To behold it is, you know, it's awe-inspiring in the worst possible way. LeBron James maybe should stick to not acting. I don't know. You know, I can't give the man, you know, too much advice. Obviously, he's a millionaire. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. But after this, I don't know if maybe this is the road he wants to continue down. But again, I think that there's an ironic element to this movie that above all the other movies on this list, it would make me go to this one again first.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my 10 through 6 worst. Kyle, you want to give us a spin on the old throw up wheel fucking?
I do. I want to say right off the bat that Resident Evil and Free Guy just barely scraped away from my top 10 worst, but that does not mean they are good.
That's very fair.
They are both bad. In fact, you can throw all three Ryan Reynolds films in there. Red Notice and The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard are all...
We'll get to that in the awards.
At number 10 is one of the most lackluster attempts at a space sci-fi film I have seen in a long time. That is Voyagers. Voyagers is a film that started out and we were like, okay, you know, there's potential in this concept. Colin Farrell is doing a good job. And from there, it proceeded to be one of the worst coming of age, like young adult space films ever, with terrible performances and wooden dialogue, mm-hmm. no menace to the threat. It's just so goddamn lackluster.
Very flat. Very flat movie.
So flat.
It's like, what if... Imagine Lord of the Flies, but if it sucked.
And Fionn Whitehead, we did nominate him,
yeah,
right? For
a truly awful performance.
Truly abysmal.
One that went really unrecognized, I think. I think
no one saw this
movie. I think this movie isn't getting enough credit for how shit it is.
It's really very bad. Not much to even say about it. Yeah. It just sucks. At number 9... Something I wholeheartedly agree with you in. It is the biggest letdown of the year. One of the biggest steps down in quality for any franchise. Halloween Kills.
What the fuck happened, Kyle? Do you know?
This movie is abysmal. It's shoddily constructed. Mm-hmm. There are times where it feels like a fan film. It is poorly written. It is poorly acted. Even by our returning members.
Yeah.
Judy Greer and
Jimmy Lee
Jimmy
Curtis
don't even do a great job.
They get nothing to fucking
the
do.
The score is so over the top, mm-hmm. corny, and sentimental. And it ends in such an unsatisfying way that just leads to you feeling like this was like 95% filler, this chapter.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. The first one showed so much potential for this trilogy that has now gone in the fucking toilet.
Makes me very, very concerned about Halloween ends. Maybe they can bring it back, but we'll see.
At number 8, another thing I agree with you on, maybe the most fun movie on the list. That's Space Jam.
Yes, sir!
A New Legacy. This movie is truly awful.
Yes.
Truly bottom of the barrel franchise filmmaking. And yet, it's it's so bad that it circles around and you're like watching it in awe. It's like someone flashing colors, like the Stargate scene from 2001.
Like the fact that the sheer fact that it exists in the state that it does.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's pandering. It thinks it's clever by referencing how bad it is, but it's just that bad.
Yeah.
It's not funny besides a couple lines. It's funny because you're laughing at it, not with it. They decide to CG animate the characters. They look horrifying.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
The acting is bad. It's all bad. The basketball scene at the end is just CGI noise, almost entirely incomprehensible.
Don Cheadle might be the only semi-redeeming part. He's having fun.
Terrible film.
Yeah.
Awful film. Still fun.
Yeah. Still a fun time with the boys.
At number 7, a movie that you missed out on.
Yeah.
Thankfully. And that is maybe the most offensive movie of the year. And that's See His Music.
Ooh.
Music is awful. I'm sure if you are in the film community, you've heard the controversy. Sia made a movie about an autistic character without doing proper research on how autistic people function, as well as what manner you should go about taking care of them in a very incredibly offensive and like downright dangerous way. It's so manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
They use all the tired tropes. Oh no, this character is sad and poor, and this character has AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
This character, like that drama thing where it's like feel bad for these people. They're go, but it's just so slimy.
Yeah.
This movie feels gross.
Yikes!
Do not watch it. It sucks.
Fuck you, Sia.
And let's round it out with number 6, another movie you thankfully avoided.
I avoided some trash this year.
This is maybe the nadir of Melissa McCarthy's career. And that is Thunder Force.
Oh my god, I completely forgot about this movie.
This movie is bad. I have been of the opinion that Melissa McCarthy can be funny, but she's just in terribly unfunny films. And this is yet another collaboration between her and her fucking husband that keeps directing these movies like Tammy and Life of the Party and The Boss. And she's got to stop. You can't build a whole movie on someone riffing and improvising.
Yeah.
You just can't. Because it's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's a structureless mess. The only redeeming part of this movie is Jason Bateman.
Doesn't he have crab hands?
He has grab hands. There's a couple good gags with him. Besides that, Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy are just stranded in this film.
Yikes.
Two talented people, especially Octavia Spencer, who just has nothing to do.
It doesn't really seem like her M.O. to be in something like this.
I mean, she was in Mock.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
And it is one of the worst films of the year. Skip it if you see it on Netflix. That is my 10 through 6. Jordan, you want to bring us into the upper echelon of poo-poo movies?
Yes, I'd love to. So, my number 5. This is where things really start to get bad for me. This is like the creme de la crap of the year. And I'm going to start with a movie that you mentioned in your back half. And that is Voyagers at number 5. I genuinely think this is the most slept on bad movie of the year. This movie should be getting all of the ire and the hatred that the back half of my list have been getting. Like, again, like you said, it's wooden. It's flat. No one knows what the fuck they're doing. I don't know what I'm supposed to be getting out of this story. Like, it thinks it's like this dark, like, sexy, dangerous, like, young adult thriller. But it's just so corny and predictable and dumb. Some of the sets are cool, I guess. Like it's not a bad looking movie again, but it's just in terms of its like its concept and construction, it's just so placid and so just absolutely nothing. It's a nothing movie. A void, if you will.
Yeah.
Avoid this movie if you can.
Yeah, on God.
My number 4 worst of the year, also a strong contender for most overrated of the year. I do not understand. I do not get what people see in this or the first fucking Venom. Venom Let There Be Carnage is absolute ass crack, beginning to end. It's badly shot. It's bad. It's terrible to look at. It's badly edited. The acting's bad. Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson are swinging for the fences. They're fucking going for it in the most Jared Leto House of Gucci way possible. Both of them play these goofy caricatures that have no substance to their character at all. There's nothing to latch on to or care about. I guess some of the interactions between Eddie and Venom are entertaining sometimes when you can understand what the fuck Venom is saying, because the sound design and mixing is just so god-awful in this movie. The story is a complete mess. A lot of the characters get nothing to do. Michelle Williams is there. And it's just, yeah, it's absolutely awful. It harkens back to, like, the Elektra era
Spawn.
Of superhero movies. Just absolute trash. My number three also harkens back to a bygone era of children's film, a la, like, the Smurfs, or, you know, where like, a character from, like, a beloved child's franchise is pulled into the wacky world of New York City. And no, you're not. It's not what you're thinking of. It's not Tom and Jerry. It is Clifford, the big red dog. What is there even to say about this movie? It's the most. It might be the most brain dead movie of the year. Not a single original thought is presented in the entire, what, like 80 minute runtime, 97 minutes. Not a single thing of any kind of cinematic or worthwhile value. It looks like a piss poor CSI knockoff. Like it's shot like a fucking sitcom. The CGI, the effects are terrible. All of the acting's awful. The dialogue editing is noticeably bad in this movie. The way it cuts away from certain jokes, like it either lingers on them too long or cuts away way too quickly. So the sense of comedic timing is just. The rhythm is completely thrown off in this movie.
Absolutely.
Which makes watching it a fucking slog to get through.
Nonsensical, yeah.
Like, it felt like we were there for years, even though the movie's only 90 minutes long.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, it's predictable. You know where the story's going front to back. There's absolutely nothing for them to do in the middle act, so it's just them, like, lackadaisically moving from one shenanigan to another of, like, what would happen if a big red dog was in New York City? Wouldn't that be cool, kids? No, it wouldn't be fucking cool. Movie sucks. Number two. My number two worst of the year. I think you and I have the same two, but I'm curious to see which order you settled on. My second worst movie of the year would be the pop star vehicle, Camila Cabello's Cinderella. If you want to talk about flat and uninspired filmmaking, this feels like the most studio-mandated, checklisty movie I've ever seen to promote someone as a brand. Like, this movie only exists to put Camila Cabello back in everyone's good graces and to resell her as, she's a princess, she's too good for this world and everything, kind of like an Ariana Grande type, yeah. And it just completely falls flat on its face. She can't sing, she can't act, no. And everyone else in this movie is left stranded, a term you used with Thunder Force. James Corden is thankfully underused, barely in the movie. All the other mice or whatever are terrible fucking... the prince sucks. All the songs suck. It's like, we didn't realize it was a jukebox musical until like 20 minutes in. All the arrangements and the renditions of the songs are boring and typical. None of the choreography is special.
No.
It is a flat, boring mess from start to finish. Billy Porter was okay for the 5 minutes that he's in it. And that is my 5-2.
That is a very good 5-2. So good, in fact, that we have very similar.
Oh, okay. All right.
Number five. This is one of the bottom tier films in the superhero genre. That is Venom Let There Be Carnage. Stinky, stinky, stinky.
Misery, misery, misery. That's what you've chosen.
You know, I think that for a while, this movie strikes a tone of so bad it's good for like the first act or so, and then it gets dreadfully boring.
Yeah.
Insanely boring, and ends with the typical two CGI monsters punching each other fight that you've seen so many times.
Computer-generated goop throwing each other.
You mentioned how bad the editing is. This movie is only like an hour and 30-something minutes long, and it crams so much information into that that you're going whiplash speed trying to get through the plot. It has one of the worst after credit scenes ever. It has one of the, that amounts to nothing, spoiler, but
yeah,
it's just absolute fucking garbage nonsense the whole time. It is painful to watch. You feel your brain cells dying. We brought our friend Dom, as you know from the last or last couple few ago, one of the biggest Spider-Man fans in the world. He was in awe at how bad this was. He was sunk down so far in his seat.
I would rather huff paint.
This movie's piss.
You'd have the same effect.
I think I might rather watch it than the first one. It's shorter.
Yeah, fair.
And Woody Harrelson's funny. Number four. We are back to the Alvin and the Chipmunks with Clifford. In fact, we've regressed as a society.
I think
this might be worse than the Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, maybe. At least the Chipmunks sing funny songs.
It was certainly worse than this year's Tom and Jerry, which also harkened back to that same period.
Yeah. Oof.
Clifford's bad. Like you said, the dialogue editing is so noticeably shit that it removes all sense of tension and, like, flow.
Any kind of, like, whimsy or fun to be had is completely knocked down by the...
I laughed a couple times throughout, mostly at how weird it is, but overall, the CG is fucking awful. Tony Hale is there. He looks boorish shit as the villain.
It's Jeff Bezos.
That kid actor that's the Asian kid is awful. It's so bad. Like, what am I supposed to say about this? Jack Whitehall has a really weird American accent that sounds wrong.
He's real bad in this.
This movie is really bad. Like, it's really hard for me to articulate some of these bad movies because they're just shit.
Yeah, maybe if you're above infancy, maybe don't go see Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Yeah. Then again, Paw Patrol wasn't too bad.
You know what? If you're going to take your kid to see a dog movie this year, go see Paw Patrol. Paw Patrol was kind of sick.
It was kind of sick.
No cap.
Number three. We hit the era of casting social media influencers in films.
Yeah.
With He's All That.
This is your number three?
This is my number three.
That's very generous.
He's All That is booty cheeks. It's the equivalent of a TikTok where Addison Rae is shaking her ass in your face.
Yeah, exactly.
It is...
But she's also shitting on you. She's shit on screen.
It is... Abysmal, abysmal, abysmal filmmaking. It is terrible. It is lit and shot so poorly. It is edited so poorly. Addison Rae can't act, but she's still better than whoever plays the male love interest.
Yeah.
Who is like an incel. He's like an incel in this film.
Forgot about that.
And it's a like a gender swapped remake of a film that nobody gives a fuck about. It's not even one of the top tier of chick flicks from the 90s. It's not like, you know, Mean Girls or something. It's fucking She's All That. Who gives a fuck? This movie had no reason to exist, but Netflix gave them the money anyway, and now we're going to be seeing Addison Rae in more movies.
Yay!
Number two. I believe this is the film that we have in the same exact spot. I think this is the only one, but it's Cinderella.
Oh, I know what you, okay. I know what you went with for number one then.
Cinderella. Cinderella is everything you said about it. It is the most corporate, studio mandated, let's make a, I don't know, woke take. I hate that term. But like
but that's
a,
what this
but
is.
Like it's a like... woke take on Cinderella. But it's not
She's
even
a
really.
Girl boss.
Because what does it defy about the story? She makes clothes? She still...
They gave Cinderella a job. That's like the most feminist thing they could think of.
It's still based entirely on her getting with a prince. It doesn't like upend any gender norms or... There's literally no reason for this movie to fucking exist.
No.
None.
We already got a good Cinderella adaptation for like 5 years ago. The Disney one. That's all
fucking, right. The Cinderella Story is a better movie than this.
Fucking Cinderella Man is a better movie than this.
I mean, I agree, but... Yeah, the only relief, the two moments of relief I felt in the entire movie are Billy Porter's song.
Yes.
And Pierce Brosnan's funny.
Oh yeah, Pierce Brosnan is pretty all right.
But they are both in it for maybe 5 minutes, and the rest of it is just absolute fucking sewage.
Yeah.
Waste. Camila Cabello can't even harmonize with herself on that one song.
I don't get it.
Absolutely. Nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
It's
pretty fucking bad.
Now we've arrived at both of our number ones. The absolute peak of poo-poo, garbage, nothing.
Yes. The darkest depths of despair.
What do you have for us?
Well, Kyle, based on my reaction to the placement of it on your list, I'm pretty sure you can guess what my number one worst movie of the year is. And that is Netflix's He's All That. I know I complained about Camila Cabello's Cinderella being, like, basically, like, a studio plant movie. Like, just trying to, like, sell this person as a brand. That's, like, this is, like, that cranked up to 10,000. If this is supposed to be a showcase of Addison Rae's, like, charm and likability and potential as a personality... I could not think of a less flattering example than this one.
Absolutely.
One of the most hollow, humorless, soulless movies I've ever seen. Looks like shit, sounds like shit, is generic with a capital fucking G. And like you said, who is this movie for? Because anyone who has any attachment to the original She's All That is like 40 now, and they're not going to want to watch a movie with a TikTok star. And anyone who's young enough to have any investment in Addison Rae doesn't give a fuck about She's All That. So this movie is it's like shouting to the void. It's for no one.
No, nobody.
It only serves to bolster the ego of this person who has no talent and is just completely undeserving of the success that she's gained from this film or otherwise. This movie fucking sucks. Everyone else in it is terrible. The guy who plays the male love interest is fucking boring and awful.
He's ass.
Corny, just terrible. The sister is fucking bad. Matthew Lillard's there for like a second. He's the one brief respite from the barrage of booty. That is He's All That. I can stand unequivocally and say that this is without a doubt the worst movie of 2021. He's All That.
Wow, you made a very compelling argument for it.
This movie fucking sucks.
My number one.
Hit me with it, Kyle.
Is a film that I didn't say anything when you said it on your list. Very low. But I think your placement's pretty low. I hadn't confirmed my number one last night.
Yeah.
I was swapping between a couple. And then in the background of a party I was at, we put on Home Alone, the first one.
Yeah.
And that just cemented Home Sweet Home Alone as the worst fucking film of the year. This is the absolute worst of slapstick comedy.
Yes.
It is so woefully uninspired, so unfunny. The cast is hamming it up so much, but they still have no energy. Even the gags at the end with the actual Home Alone and the traps and stuff are so lackluster. Nothing hits.
No imagination funny. Whatsoever.
It's shot, lit, and edited like a fucking YouTube video. It's so... Rob Delaney doesn't know where he is. Ellie Kemper doesn't know where she is. That fucking kid from Jojo Rabbit is awful. Terrible. The idea, the concept behind this movie could be sound in somebody's hands making the kid the villain. but you don't like anyone. You don't like the adults. You don't want them to succeed, and you don't want the shithead of a kid to succeed either.
Shout out to Kenan Thompson for starring in two of the worst movies of the year.
Yeah, Clifford too. Clifford. Holy shit. This movie is... it's cheeks. It's fucking garbage. I hate this movie. This is the movie that left me feeling the angriest and the emptiest. I felt nothing watching this movie, and for me, it is the absolute worst film of the year.
You know what? I could be convinced. That was
trash.
That was pretty solid.
So trash.
You heard it here first, folks. The two worst movies of the year. He's All That and Home Sweet Home Alone. If there are two movies to avoid that released in the past year, those are the two.
Stinky.
But now that we got that out of the fucking way, we can move on to the shit we liked.
We do. I guess I can start with this one because you started with the let's pretty much burn through our 20 through 11.
That's what I was thinking. Just kind of run through those, and then our top 10, we'll get more in depth.
You're going to see, while our worst lists were very similar, our top 10 lists are not.
No.
They're very different. I'm going to read off a couple honorable mentions, movies that missed my top 20. For reference, I saw about 100 movies this year, so...
Same, we both capped out around there.
So... five honorable mentions I just want to spit out the names of that I think should be mentioned. The Last Duel, Judas and the Black Messiah, No Time to Die, Last Night in Soho, and Spencer.
Okay. All right, fair.
All miss my list.
That Last Duel placement hurts me.
I know.
But it's fine. It's fine. Subjectivity is what makes the world go round.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
so,
Kyle.
So let me speed through my 20 through 11 here. Number 20. The A24 film, St. Maud. I really like this movie. I think it's super tight, well edited, well acted, well shot. Very creepy and unnerving A24 horror. Number 19, we have Spider-Man, No Way Home. One of the better films in the MCU.
True.
It was a great theater experience. I've seen it twice now. It holds up. It's fun. It's intense. It's dramatic. Tom Holland gives the best performance I've ever seen him give. And it's a very good film that brings together a lot of generations of superhero films in a very compelling way.
You're right.
Number 18, Mitchells versus the Machines. This movie is so fast-paced and zany and off the wall. It is Phil Lord and Chris Miller style. I know they were just producers, but their fingerprint, their DNA is definitely on this thing. Great voice cast. So many like little background jokes and gags. I still think about the Furby scene. I think it might be the funniest scene of the year.
Pretty fucking funny.
I love that movie. Watch it if you haven't. Number 17, the new Pixar film, Luca. I really like Luca a lot. I think it captures all the charm of like a Hayao Miyazaki kind of aimless coming of age film. Mm-hmm. It's very charming, the characters are super likable, and the stakes are refreshingly low for a Pixar movie. It's not about the end of the world, it's just about getting a fucking Vespa.
Sometimes that's all you need, man.
With the homie, but not gay though. No,
yeah,
homie.
Not no homo.
Number 16, we have the love letter to his hometown that Kenneth Branagh decided to make, Belfast. Belfast is a movie with a amazing star-making performance from the young Jude Hill, shot in gorgeous black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's just this sweet movie about this kid growing up during the riots in the 1960s in Belfast,
yeah,
in Ireland. And the supporting cast is fucking stellar. It's just a great movie.
Yeah.
Just a great little movie. Number 15. One of my favorite thrillers of the year, one I've gone back to see multiple times, A Quiet Place Part 2. This movie is very Spielbergian in the best possible way. It reminded me of like War of the Worlds or one of his films like that. It's so well crafted. John Krasinski really ups his direction game,
yes,
from the first movie. He shoots these big set pieces with this monster in very clever ways and has some of the best cross-cutting I've seen in a movie. Cutting between two storylines in such a succinct way. Yeah, absolutely great stuff. Number 14. One of the biggest surprises of the year, one I didn't know about until like a couple months before it came out, and it's The Night House. A fantastic Thriller with Rebecca Hall giving one of the best performances of the year that will not get recognized from anyone, but she is so terrific in this movie.
Yes.
It's shot well. It's refreshing to see a movie respect the audience's intelligence enough to not explain things to them.
Mm.
It gives you the details and then leaves you with them. Lets you figure it out for yourself. Super ambiguous, and I love it. Number 13. One of the most anxiety-inducing experiences of the year, Shiva Baby. This movie will make you shake. It's like Uncut Gems at a Jewish birthday or a funeral.
Yeah.
It's super intense. An amazing central performance by Rachel Sennott. It just makes you fucking uncomfortable. It's so brief. It's like 80 minutes long. And it just keeps ramping up the tension until you think that they can't keep going, and then they always manage to. Love the movie. Fantastic movie.
What did I say when I saw it? It's like the Safdies made Lady Bird.
Yeah. Number 12. One of my favorite art house films of the year. One of my favorite musicals of the year, and that's Annette.
Fair.
I wanted to get this into the top 10, couldn't quite, but this movie is really great. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going under a lot of people's radars. It is really well acted, very well acted. Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard are incredible. Simon Helberg is one of the most underrated performances of the year in it. He's excellent. Shot very well, edited very uniquely. The songs are all live sung and they're very catchy. And this movie really works for me. It won't work for everyone, but if you're into more artsy films and you love musicals, I would definitely give it a shot. And number 11, my last one before it, one that you missed out on, but one that I think everyone should watch, I don't think enough people have seen, is a movie called 9 Days, starring Winston Duke, Zazie Beetz, Benedict Wong, Tony Hale, Bill Skarsgård. It's a great cast. It's a very artsy movie about a man who has to conduct interviews with human souls before they're born.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, the one who he decides on, gets a chance to be born into the world.
Okay.
Very unique concept.
Yeah.
Very, it's very hard to like wrap your head around, but it's so cool.
Yeah.
And heartfelt and emotional. And I love this movie. I think everyone should give it a watch. That's my 20 through 11.
Here we go. All right, so I'm gonna name five off honorable mentions that didn't quite crack my top 20, but I still feel bare mentioning anyway. Zack Snyder's Justice League,
yep.
Malignant, Bo Burnham's Inside, Encanto, and Nobody.
Okay, one of those hurts me, but that's okay.
All right, starting at number 20, No Time to Die.
Nice.
The newest James Bond film, Cary Fukunaga. Delivering explosive action. It's so electric and practical. Some of the stunt work here is probably some of the best of the year. Daniel Craig gives an excellent, spoilers, final performance as his iteration of James Bond. And it really sticks the landing, bringing everything to a satisfying conclusion. Number 19, The Night House. The follow-up from the director whose name I do not remember, director of The Ritual.
David Bruckner,
which is also a very good horror movie, like you said. A fantastic lead performance from Rebecca Hall. Really ambiguous, really open to interpretation, and really, really nails those themes of like trauma and loss and grief and all that, and the way we process that. Very cool movie. Number 18, Quiet Place Part 2. I agree with you about the Spielbergian stuff. It's just a very cool, urgent like horror movie, but not like one that's gonna like fuck up your soul or anything. Like, it's just very entertaining and very well constructed.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very cool follow-up. I can't wait to see what John Krasinski does with the third one. Number 17, Shiva Baby. Like you said, one of the most anxiety-inducing movies of the year. It's like the Uncut Gems of 2021. Made me sweat the entire fucking time. Good ass movie, so well written, so well made, and terrific lead performance from Rachel Sennott. Number 16, a movie I don't think will make your list, but that is Tick Tick Boom, starring Andrew Garfield. I had never listened to the music before hearing this, So this was like my first experience with the show, and I was really impressed. Lin-Manuel Miranda can do so much good when he's not the one in the thing. Like, his touch on this movie is so surprisingly deft and confident, like as a film director. Like, I was so shocked by how well presented this movie. And Andrew Garfield, man, is on some next level shit in this. He delivers one of my favorite performances of the year. I don't know if I can say it's the best, but it's up there. It's a really, really heartfelt movie. Really, really gut punches you in the feels, as the kids would say in 2012. My number 15, Passing. Directorial debut from Rebecca Hall, starring Ruth Negga and Tessa Thompson, both in terrific lead performances. It's a great, very well-written movie, very well-constructed movie. And if you like movies where people just kind of act at each other the whole time really well, this is for you. Like, this movie really reads like a play.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is a play adaptation of this story or not, but there should be, because I think it would suit itself very well for that. My number 14, Spider-Man, No Way Home. The best thing Marvel did all year, including all their TV shows. Maybe besides Loki. But, very entertaining, very compelling, very satisfying, the way it wraps up a lot of these arcs and everything that have been building since, like, 2002, spoiler alert, I guess. Like you said, Tom Holland's best performance, maybe ever. I was surprised by how Like, this movie is really expansive and covers a lot, but at the end of the day, it never forgets that it's a Spider-Man movie.
Never forgets the core.
And everything that happens in this movie serves the character of Spider-Man. Like, this felt like the first time in a long time I wasn't watching an MCU movie that was just a commercial for the next thing, even though it really is with Doctor Strange and everything. But just the handling of the story felt very, like, singular to the character, and it was really cool. My number 13, Guillermo del Toro's new film, Nightmare Alley. Strong contender for the best-looking movie of the year. So atmospheric, so creepy and eerie. Stacked cast across the board. Bradley Cooper gives an insane performance in this. It's very good. It was kind of swept under the rug by Spider-Man, but if you like Guillermo del Toro and you know, you like noir kind of horror-esque stories, definitely check this one out. My number 12, what I think is the best animated movie of the year, The Mitchells versus the Machines. Like you said, this is like another fix of Spider-Verse, essentially. Like if you're jonesing for, like, that really expressive, explosive kind of animation that's almost like a comic book brought to life, this is for you. The voice cast is so funny, so endearing, consistently funny. I don't know if I laughed more at a film this year than during Mitchell's. It's like that like a joke a minute kind of Lego movie
exactly
humor. It's very cool, very heartfelt. One of the most unique movies of the year. Yes. I really dug Mitchell's versus Machines. And finally, my number 11 spot. I'm officially handing this movie the coolest movie of the year award, and that is The Harder They Fall.
Wow.
One of the strongest ensembles of the year. So well acted across the board. And this movie just drips with style. It's so effortlessly cool. And it's sweet to see, like, a Western that's very, like earnestly corny and silly. And this movie really, really leans into that angle. It's very entertaining, very cool, very well acted across the board. Jonathan Majors and Idris Elba are very, very good as the two sides of this conflict, the good guy and the bad guy. But yeah, no, it's a very awesome Western, very cool action. Definitely check it out if you're a Django Unchained fan. Definitely check out Harder They Fall. It's kind of the same vein.
Very nice to hear.
Yeah.
Good list.
And now we reach our top tens.
All right.
Do we want to just go, like, 10 through 2? Might expedite things a little bit.
Okay. Number 10 through 2. All right. My number 10. We disagree if this even counts. But fuck it, because it's my list and I don't care.
Fair.
Number 10 for me is Nomadland.
Okay. Yeah, fair.
This movie for me felt like a tone poem. And I mean that in the best possible way. You're following this character of Frances McDormand as she goes about her life as a nomad.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it to be a gorgeous reflection of kind of humanity and a very soulful film driven by an amazing lead performance by her. I thought it was gorgeously shot by Chloe Zhao, gorgeously presented. I just adored what this movie was attempting. It made me feel more so than most movies this year.
Yeah.
At number 9, you'd mentioned it before. It is one of my favorite films of the year, and that's Passing.
Yeah.
I think Passing is absolutely fucking drop-dead gorgeous.
Yeah.
The framing and the black and white incorporation, the aspect ratio, all of it's so purposeful. And that's what I can say about this movie. Every decision that Rebecca Hall makes here feels so purposeful.
What a debut.
What a debut.
Fuck it.
It's almost like I'm seeing the future of her career, and she almost seems like a perfectionist type of director.
Yeah. She's the next Kubrick.
It has a very powerful ending.
Mm-hmm.
It has incredible performances, especially Ruth Negga, who's amazing in this movie.
I really hope she gets the nomination.
I love the score of this movie. This movie is just terrific.
Oh, I completely forgot about the score. I love jazz.
It's so good. Yeah, this movie is fucking excellent.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are giving it enough credit or watching it up.
It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix. Check it out.
It's amazing. Number 8. One that is not on yours, but is definitely on mine. And that is Titan.
Yes.
The French film by Julia Ducournau. This movie is absolute insanity.
Yeah.
Art house fucking nonsense.
She got that right.
And it is very weird and off-putting and stressful. But ultimately, when you boil it down, it's kind of sweet. And that's the weirdest balance that I've seen this year, but a balance that they managed to strike pretty damn well.
It's pretty miraculous how they're able to, like, keep that, like, consistent.
Pretty excellent performance by Vincent Lindon.
Yes.
Pretty excellent performance by Agatha Roussel. It's well shot, well scored, very well edited. Love the dance montages. Great movie. Weird. I'd say if you don't know anything about it, go in blind, because it's just so fucking strange. I love this movie. Number 7. The best blockbuster... Sorry, not blockbuster. The best comic book film of the year, The Suicide Squad. The Suicide Squad is the most fun I had with a movie all year.
I completely agree.
It is so twisted and violent, but like I mentioned with Titan, it's also sweet, and that's the balance that James Gunn is able to hit so well.
Mm-hmm.
He makes these big, bombastic blockbusters with violence and swearing and these unlikable people, but manages to make them likable and sweet, and finds the central relationships that define them.
Some of the best characterization in a film this year.
Some of the best visual effects incorporation in this big scale.
I can't believe it didn't make the fucking Oscar shortlist.
Amazing action sequences. That Harley Quinn one is maybe the action scene of the year.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Adore it. Great movie. Well, I was guessing you've probably seen it. It actually didn't make much money. Maybe you haven't seen it. Watch it. It's on HBO Max.
Watch this fucking movie.
Fucking excellent movie. At number 6... The Master is back. Steven Spielberg with West Side Story. This man had been wanting to make a musical for like almost his whole career. And holy shit, you can tell. Because he comes out guns blazing and makes a musical. This movie is humming. It is singing with song and dance and movement. Meticulous blocking. Amazing choreography, fantastic performances. Rachel Zegler is a motherfucking star. This movie is just so goddamn good. It feels like you're watching a master at work, because you are. Yeah.
You're right.
Incredible movie. At number 5. Another movie that feels like you're watching a master at work. In fact, you could say that about all of the movies in this top portion. That is Wes Anderson with The French Dispatch. This movie is insanity. It is the most Wes Anderson film. But I mean that in the best possible way. It feels like him boiling down his style to the essentials. Just ridiculous set design. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous production design. Amazing cinematography. The way he coordinates and brings all the stories together and to a head. The first and third stories in particular are so great, but instead of just being whimsical, the movie also has an air of melancholy to it. It feels sad but sweet at the same time. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's appreciating life while also knowing that it doesn't last forever. And I love the tone it strikes. I love the storybook look. This era of Wes Anderson, this and Grand Budapest and stuff, he's on top of the world right now. I love him. This movie's so good. And number four is the newest movie on this list I've seen, and it's the joyful Licorice Pizza. Licorice Pizza is so fucking good. Two of the absolute best performances of the year with Cooper Hoffman and Elena Haim. Amazing cinematography, an amazing soundtrack. The movie flows. It's just a vibe. It feels like you are getting to know this relationship and these people through this very important time in their lives. This relationship that could be creepy in the wrong context, but feels absolutely, it feels genuine and sweet, and you understand why Paul Thomas Anderson is just one of the, he can't miss, one of the best filmmakers working today. I don't know. This movie's just amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. I feel like I'm using that word too much, amazing.
No, but you are right. It is an amazing movie.
At number three is the most underrated film of the year. A movie that has not been getting enough credit, and goddamn enough people didn't go see it. Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley.
Damn!
This movie...
Damn, that's up there for you.
This movie is up my alley. I felt like it was made for me.
It's up your Nightmare Alley.
I felt like it was made for me. Meticulous cinematography. Amazing production design. Super interesting character work, especially with our main character, who has one of the most complete and full character arcs I have seen in a movie in quite some time.
Yeah.
The wrap-up on his character arc,
insanity.
Supremely satisfying.
The theater full of old people we saw this with all collectively all gasping. Went, oh! Like
gasping. It is an incredible ending. The supporting cast is out of control. Willem Dafoe, David Strathair, Rooney Mara, Kate Blanchett, just Toni Collette. Amazing movie. Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. That's And number two. This is the best blockbuster of the year. Denis coming in hot with Dune.
Dune your mom.
This movie is fucking fantastic.
That's pretty fucking good.
The score bangs. The cast is like the best ensemble cast ever. The cinematography is just out of this world good. The production design,
the
makeup.
Batman.
Oh my god. That we didn't even talk about the new trailer. We were too busy this episode. But this movie is so fucking good.
You're right.
It moves. It's like methodically paced, but it's never like boring. Mm-hmm. And it gives you all the necessary information and just pushes you into this alien world that feels so tangible and real because the effects work is so amazing. Mm-hmm. And it sets the stage perfectly for a sequel. Dune Part 2.
Yes, sir.
Which we're forgetting.
Yes,
but yes,
sir.
So this is my 10 through 2.
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a list. I hope mine stacks up.
Let's do it.
All right. At number 10. Is a movie I think you missed out on. That would be Pig.
I did miss out on Pig.
Starring Nicolas Cage. A very deceptively slow burn, contemplative movie that it's all about like loss and trauma and grief. And it really didn't bill itself as that. Like going into it, you're kind of expecting like a John Wick thriller almost about this man trying to get his truffle pig back. But that's not what it is at all. It's poetic almost. It's very melancholy, a very sad movie, but in an almost comforting kind of way, maybe the best performance Nicolas Cage has ever given. He's incredible in this movie. My favorite Nick Cage movie since Mandy. It's awesome. It's well shot, well crafted. And just absolutely bolstered by this fantastic lead performance. He's so goddamn good in it.
This is what I'm gonna watch. Yes. I'm going to seek this out.
Watch Pig as soon as you can.
Yes.
Number 9. This one might surprise you. Well, I was gonna say what looks like my favorite horror movie of the year, but my second favorite horror movie technically. We'll get there. And that's Candyman, directed by Nia DaCosta. One of the meanest, gnarliest horror movies I've seen in ages. What I appreciate about it is it never like tiptoes around its themes of race and gentrification and everything. It paints them on a brick and throws it at your fucking head.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a loud, in-your-face kind of movie that really grabs you by the collar and never lets you go. Some incredible set pieces in this. Just a very like tense atmosphere, strikes the tone perfectly, and it's so well acted across the board.
Yeah.
If we want to talk about impressive debuts, Nia DaCosta absolutely fucking nails this. Cannot wait to see what she does in the future.
It just missed my honorable mentions by literally one.
That's fair. That's fair. And number 8, a movie that was in your bottom section, but one that I really loved, that is Kenneth Branagh's Belfast.
Yes, yeah.
A movie that just struck a chord with me emotionally. It's very, very nostalgic. It's like the equivalent of smelling like your grandma's cookies. Like, it really just takes you back to
Good comparison.
It takes you back to this place and time where things were just simpler and you were just kind of vibing with your family. And what I love about it is it really captures that perspective of you being a child, like, in the midst of crisis. Jude Hill is kind of like having his story and everything while all of this explosive violence and these riots are kind of happening around him. But, you know, it's about kind of that bubble that's kind of put around you. And it's like remembering the good times and the bad, you know what I mean? Very powerful movie. I love Belfast. My number 7, my favorite horror movie of the year. One that I watched very recently for our catch-up episode and one that smacked me across the ass. Just absolutely throttled me. That would be Saint Maud.
Wow.
Saint Maud was maybe my biggest, one of the best delights of the year. One of the most delightful surprises. I missed it when it came out originally. I respect the hell out of any movie that will say fuck the Catholic Church with its whole chest like that. The things it has to say about religion and martyrdom just feel, especially like in kind of a religiously tense culture that we live in, that just feels like something that needs to be said right now. And on top of that, it's a really tight, twistedly entertaining horror movie. It's like 80 minutes long. The set pieces, the effects are so spooky. It's just spooky. It's a spooky movie.
And it is a spooky movie.
Probably one of my favorite endings of the year, too.
I agree with
very,
that.
Very, very, very sick movie. Go check it out.
Yeah, it's good. Very good.
My number 6. The big spectacle phenomenon of the year. That is Denis Villeneuve's Dune. Insane that we got a version of this story that is wildly entertaining, let alone comprehensive. The most impressive part of this movie to me is just how well Denis compartmentalizes everything.
Yes.
Everything is so accessible and fun and relatable in this world of like these noble families running whole planets and everything and like space magic and spice. The fact that he never loses the audience in any of that is a fucking testament to him as a director. And on top of that, it's a fucking feast. It looks terrific. It sounds terrific. The action's really entertaining. All the performances across the board are really good. There is just so much to dissect and take away from Dune, just visually alone. But yes, man, very, very entertaining movie. I fucking love Dune. My number 5, I think we actually have this in the same spot on our lists. Wes Anderson's The French Dispatch. I spent the latter half of this year becoming a Wes Anderson convert. I watched this movie, and then I watched Fantastic Mr. Fox, and Grand Budapest for the first time. Yeah. And I gotta say, I am on board the Wes Anderson train.
He's good, man.
I want to sit down on a little table and sip like a little cup of tea in a yellow soup.
Put it perfectly set.
Yes, like just the craftsmanship. Wes Anderson clearly loves making movies.
Easily.
And you get that sense, like, every story is like a Rube Goldberg machine. It just, everything falls into place so perfectly. It's so meticulously crafted, but so sweet and endearing. And it really captures this tone about the human spirit, you know, and everything. And kind of these slice of life stories and everything. I think, I agree with you, like, the tone it strikes and everything is just perfect. Very, very sweet movie. If you're a Wes Anderson fan, check it out.
Fucking great, man.
Number four. My favorite blockbuster of the year, and also the best comic book movie of the year, and that is James Gunn's The Suicide Squad.
Hell yeah.
Again, I have to agree with you. Maybe the most fun I had in a theater this year. Completely blown away by just how fucking entertaining this movie is.
Yeah.
In such a fundamental way. Like, this movie gets things right that a lot of comic book movies just don't really give that much attention to. Like, the characterization and the way these characters are presented and written is so relatable and so likable. Like by that last action scene, you know, you're rooting for all of these disparate personalities coming together and everything. Yeah. And it's just, on top of that, it's fucking hilarious. The action is funny. I think I have to give the Furby scene a run for its money. I think the scene in the camp might be the funniest gag of the year.
Oh, that's funny.
Where Peacemaker and Bloodsport are trying to one-up each other. It is the twisted jolt of life that comic book movies were missing, I think. What we need are more filmmaker-driven comic book movies like this.
That and Kick-Ass and stuff like that.
Like the DNA of the filmmaker comes through, and they clearly care so much about these characters and these stories. Like, this is whatever, like, whatever Black Widow or, like, studio-churned-out comic book movie, this is the exact opposite of that. This feels very much like James Gunn's vision.
Crossing my fingers for Raimi's Doctor Strange.
Yes, yes. My number three, a movie I was a little disappointed to see you play so low. I fucking loved Ridley Scott's The Last Duel.
You did.
An incredible motion picture.
Good movie.
So timely. With the themes of, you know, women being silenced, like, in the face of male ego and everything, and how these stories of, like, accusations and everything, like, get the media, the liberal media, what have you believe. I guess whatever the medieval equivalent of the media is, like,
the church.
They turn it into something it's not, and they kind of miss the point.
Yeah.
And make it more about the conflict rather than justice. You know what I mean? And I think the way this movie presents that idea is so interesting. The way, like, it tells the story in three separate parts. Like, the same story three different times. One from Matt Damon's perspective, then Adam Driver, and then Jodie Comer. And I just think that's such a cool way to present that story. It's so well acted. Yeah. Ben Affleck.
Crazy.
Almost runs away with this thing. He's hilarious.
But Jodie Comer.
Jodie Comer is incredible. One of my favorite performances of the year. Matt Damon and Adam Driver are great in this. And again, I think I have to disagree with you. I think the finale of this movie is the best action scene of the year. The fight between Adam Driver and... Because...
It's an amazing scene.
There's so much... But there's also so much emotionality charged in it. This is a long movie. And so to get to the titular last duel, like, it really builds up to it.
When it finally
explodes... You are in it. I'm sure you remember. I was on the edge of my seat, fucking white knuckled.
That was an amazing scene.
This movie's incredible. Check it out if you can. My number two. Not another movie, but a movie we saw very recently.
Yes.
Very, very recently. And that is Paul Thomas Anderson's Licorice Pizza. Coming from someone who's only ever seen Phantom Thread, I don't have a lot of experience with the Paul Thomas Anderson oeuvre. I don't know how it stacks up against other films. I'm looking at this film completely in a vacuum, and it's damn near perfect.
Yeah,
it is a sweet, heartfelt, soulful movie that it feels, again, like, even to a greater extent than Belfast, like, this feels like it was plucked right out of Paul Thomas Anderson's life. The way he captures this very specific moment in these two people's lives, like, the best summer they've ever had, it's like smelling your grandma's cookies. It's nostalgic, and it's like a warm embrace. It really just brings you into this like simpler fairy tale land that he just kind of plays around in for 80 minutes, and you never want to look away from the screen. Elena Haim and Cooper Hoffman are magnetic, incredible. I'm sure they'll both get nominated, and I'll love to see it.
Also, one of the funniest movies of the year.
Bradley Cooper, man.
Yeah.
Listen, I think Nightmare Alley's great. I love Bradley Cooper in it.
Yeah.
This is the Bradley Cooper performance of the year. He's fucking insane in this movie.
Yeah.
Just completely deranged. Hilarious. I think we have the same criticism. It gets a little less interesting in the second half. But other than that, man, it's a fucking ride. Just absolutely. It's a vibe. That's the only way. I know it's overused, but that's the only way I can describe it. It's a vibe, man. And that is my 10 through 2.
Great fucking list, man.
So, Kyle.
Yeah.
This brings us to the end of the crossroads here.
Yes. Yes, it does. My number one is a film... we argue about that. That
throw quotes around film, but...
It's one that... It was my number one when I saw it. And I've been trying to find a different number one since.
But you just can't.
I just can't. And... This is going to be pretty cringe of me to admit.
It is pretty cringe, but...
But my number one is Bo Burnham's Inside. First of all, I consider it a film, because it's telling a story, and it's a narrative, and it's 80 minutes long, so... But also... this is the movie I related to the most this year. And I feel like... I watch movies... for the emotionality more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the main reason why Christopher Nolan's Interstellar is my favorite movie from his, because it makes me feel the most.
Yeah.
This movie made me feel the most. It made me tear up. I've seen it like 5 or 6 times now. I think the music in it is fantastic. I think it's Bo Burnham, in terms of Bo Burnham's act, I've seen his other stand-up specials.
Mm-hmm.
It's his best writing. It's his best, and it's his best vocals. To date,
mm-hmm.
while also being a movie that he made by himself, which is pretty impressive. The way he lights everything, the way he shoots it.
Yeah.
You know, he was putting a lot of work into this one-man freak out.
Yeah.
It's
Descent.
And while the themes that he is saying and the things he's telling you aren't new, it's been talked about before, I do think he does it in a way that very much relates with me and my generation.
Yeah.
in a way.
It speaks to the times very well.
It speaks to the times, and this is easily, I think, the best piece of art to come out of the pandemic and the feelings of isolation and the feelings
this really does feel like the defining work of the COVID era.
I really do think so, and really, I can't say anything more than just it hit me. It hit me personally. I felt it in my bones. I felt it. And I loved the thing. I loved the experience watching it. It was my favorite piece of art of the year. My favorite piece of art of the year.
Nice. That's awesome.
What's your number one? I know your number one, but what's your number one?
Well, Kyle, if your number one is a story that really is kind of on the pulse of the now... and is really in the moment.
Yeah.
My favorite film of the year looks back a bit. My favorite director, Steven Spielberg, I know, hot take, has kind of lost a touch in recent years, we'll admit.
Yeah.
Ready Player One's okay.
The Post.
Yeah. Whatever. I cannot tell you how ecstatic I was after seeing West Side Story. To see... this absolute master, this goat, if you will, just prove in the very first shot why he's the best director of all time, and then continue to prove it like 80,000 more times, made me feel the most alive I have felt all year. Steven Spielberg's West Side Story is the reason movies get made. It is an electric explosion of joy and soul. Like you said, the movie itself like sings, it moves, it dances. Some of the camera work in this is insane. The way they stage these intricate choreography pieces and everything, the camera just weaving in and it captures all of it so well. Like you said, this is a fucking musical, and it knows it and it loves it.
It owns it.
I to say Steven Spielberg is confident behind the camera, maybe the most massive understatement of the year. Dude rolls up and delivers one of the most intricately crafted movies of the year. Beautifully acted across the board. All of the performances are great.
Yeah, they are.
Like you said, Rachel Zegler, a star in the making. She is phenomenal in this. Personally, I would like to see her walk away with the gold come award season. We'll see how much of a long shot that is, but a revelation. She is so heart-wrenchingly tender in this movie, and vocally steals the show. Ariana DeBose is incredible. Mike Faced is great. I'm so low words there. But really, like, I really think the star of the show here is Spielberg, man. He's clearly wanted to make a musical for so long, and this really feels like everything that's been building up to that. I don't know what else I can say. It's West Side Story. It's Steven Spielberg. He fucking nailed it.
Yep. Dummy on the paint.
Incredible movie.
Yep.
My favorite movie of 2021.
And we did it. Those are our...
We brought it in. A whole year of podcasting culminated.
And let's hope for a few more.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Well, we still have a bit of a ceremony to get through.
We absolutely do.
Now that we're done babbling about our favorite movies, we get to hear what you thought. The people.
So we have 17 categories on the docket for today that we asked you guys to vote on, and a few of you did, and now we have the awards. We have the awards for the first annual Shakeys.
Yeah. Let's start
with worst
performance.
Let's start with worst performance.
Okay. Coming in. You wanna do it like a top three? We'll name the two runner-ups and then... You wanna name a winner?
Yes.
All right. Coming in at third place, we have LeBron James, Space Jam, A New Legacy. At second place, in a hotly contested between first and second place. In second place, we have Ben Platt in Dear Evan Hansen. And in first place, the inaugural Shaky Award winner for worst performance of the year is Camila Cabello for Cinderella, a very well-deserved award.
Just a shitty performance. Ben Platt was leading for a while, but
Camila Cabello came back.
Now we have biggest letdown of the year. At number three, we have a tie.
Ooh.
Between Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings.
Yes.
And Don't Look Up.
Oof.
At number two, biggest letdown, we have The Green Knight.
That's going to be controversial.
But we agree with that.
Yes.
And number one, Halloween Kills.
Biggest letdown of the year, yes.
Of the last few years.
100%. Next up, most overrated film. At number three, we have Cruella. At number two, we have Black Widow.
Mm.
And at number one, the winner of the most overrated film, Shaky, pretty well deserved, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
We agree.
A completely fine blockbuster that everyone acted like was the second coming.
Worst Ryan Reynolds film. There are only three.
But I feel like this was an award that needed awarding.
Number three, Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Fuck you, Ryan Reynolds. Number two, Red Notice. Fuck you, Ryan Reynolds. And number one, Free Guy.
Wait. Can I do this one?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Ryan Reynolds.
There we go. Now we have biggest fuck up.
The biggest fuck up of 2021. So I think, well, you know, we kind of talk about like celebrity news sometimes if it's worth mentioning on here. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of famous people did a lot of fucked up shit this year. And we wanted to really award the shittiest one. So in third place, we have John Cena for becoming a Chinese citizen. The whole fiasco with him during the Suicide Squad promotion. In second place, we have Armie Hammer being outed as a cannibal.
That's pretty bad. I'm surprised that didn't work.
Honestly, I am too. You're thinking, what could possibly be worse? The winner of the biggest fuck-up of 2021 is Letitia Wright, Black Panther's own Shuri, for fumbling the bag, potentially, by being an anti-vax shithead.
Yep.
Get vaccinated, people. Don't listen to Shuri.
Get vaccinated. Now we have the worst film of 2021 as decided by you guys.
Surprising win here.
At number three, we have a three-way tie.
Yes.
Between Space Jam A New Legacy, He's All That, and Halloween Kills.
At number two, we have Cinderella. And number one, a film that didn't even touch either of our worst lists.
It was in my dishonorable mentions.
It was in my dishonorable mentions. Dear Evan Hansen.
You guys really did not like this movie. It sucks, don't get me wrong. This movie was awful. But honestly, I'm kind of glad to see it win. The people have spoken. The first winner of the shaky for worst film, Dear Evan Hansen.
Now let's get into the good movies.
Yeah.
The good categories. So
do we want to start with this one? You just want to work backwards?
Yeah. So let's start with most underrated / underseen film.
In third place, we have the Bob Odenkirk action vehicle, Nobody. In second place, we have James Wan's Malignant. And in first place, the winner of the most underrated, underseen film of 2021, Ridley Scott's The Last Duel. You're goddamn right it is. Completely agree with that.
We have next, Biggest Surprise. At number three, or actually, I can only do two here, because there's like a one.
Two and three both have tied votes.
So, three and number two have tied for votes. It is Malignant and Jungle Cruise for Woo! Biggest Surprise. But number one, running away with it, it is Zack Snyder's Justice League.
I
agree with that.
I can see that. That was a really delightful surprise.
It was either that or Malignant for me.
Honestly, yeah. All right. Now we have Best Score, the music that made the movies this year. At number three, we have a tie between Spencer and No Time to Die. Two very good scores this year. At number two, I know we had Johnny Greenwood for Spencer nominated on a bunch of those. At number two, we have Encanto, which honestly, yeah, that's maybe the best Disney score since Moana. So I was glad to see that get some recognition. And the winner for best score is Dune. People love that throat singer, man. They love to hear him throat sing. Gotta have a bit of a running pattern here.
Best cinematography. At number three, we have the French Dispatch. At number two, we have a tie between West Side Story and Spencer.
Fair.
Both amazing cinematography. And number one, absolutely sprinting away with the award, Dune.
Yeah. I'm going to do it every time we announce Dune as a winner. Best Direction in third place. A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one. John Krasinski for A Quiet Place Part 2. In second place, Steven Spielberg for West Side Story. You guys really let me down on that one. And in first place, the winner of the Best Direction Shaky is Denis Villeneuve for Dune. Anyway.
I keep saying dumb shit. Best Visual Effects. At number three, we have The Green Knight.
Fair.
At number two, Spider-Man No Way Home. Sure.
Fucking normies, whatever you say.
And number one, Dune. Oh my lord.
Dune is definitely taking these shakies away.
What do we got next,
Jordan? We have the best ensemble of the year. This is the awarding the entire cast as a whole, like the strongest collective of performers. In third place, we have a tie for The French Dispatch and West Side Story.
Yeah.
In second place is Dune. And in first place, the winner of the best ensemble shaky is James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. Honestly, really happy to see that
one. I wanted to see one award.
That is a really strong collection of performances in that movie.
Now we have Best Supporting Performance.
Yes.
At number three, we have a tie between Daniel Kaluuya in Judas and the Black Messiah and Ariana DeBose in West Side Story. Number two, we have Ben Affleck in The Last Duel.
Let's go!
And number one, with the widest margin of a win out of all the categories, Willem Dafoe in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Honestly, a well-deserved award. That is a terrific performance. He's probably the best part of that movie.
Absolutely he is.
All right. Our second to last category, Best Lead Performance. So, in third place, we have Rachel Zegler for West Side Story. In a tie for second place, we have Kristen Stewart for Spencer and Nicolas Cage for Pig, wow. which warms my heart to see. And the winner for Best Lead Performance is Andrew Garfield in Tick, Tick, Boom. Honestly, if you're looking for Oscar predictions, this is it. I think the dude's walking away with it. But yeah, well, very, very good job, Mr. Garfield. Very good win.
Good job, good job, good job.
And now, our final, well, second to final category.
Best Picture.
Lots of films were nominated, lots of films were voted on.
At number three, it is a tie between West Side Story and The Mitchells versus The Machine.
Yes.
People fucking with The Mitchells.
Yes.
At number two, we have Dune.
Nah, wait, it didn't win. Never mind.
Didn't win. And number one, you fucking normies, Spider-Man
No Way Home. The winner of the very first Best Film.
By quite a few votes. By quite a few.
Honestly, if we're talking about like a cultural moment, like a film that really touched everyone, Spider-Man's up there. I totally see why that won. And now we have our final sort, you know, winner category of the evening. The most anticipated film of 2022. Let me get there real quick.
And it's the only category I'm looking at that has a tie for first place.
You are absolutely right. Okay, so in third place, we have Babylon, the new Damien Chazelle movie. In a four-way tie for second place, we have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Nope, Jordan Peele's next film, The Northman, the new Robert Eggers film, and Thor, Love and Thunder. And like you said, in a tie for first place, the most anticipated film of 2022 comes down to The Batman and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1.
Hell yes.
Probably my most two anticipated for the movie.
I agree.
For the year. Well, Kyle, it's been a hell of a ride. It's been a hell of a year podcasting with you. No one else I'd want to do with it. Put her there. And I'll see you next year, I guess. We're taking a week off just to kind of simmer down, you know.
We will be back the week of the 11th to talk about the Scream films.
Yes.
Until then, if you like the podcast, you can follow it on Twitter and Instagram at Cinema Shakedown, and you can follow me personally on Twitter and Letterboxd at Kyle Craigbaum. That's KRIEGHBAUM.
And you can follow me on Twitter at @_fatman99 or on Letterboxd at my name, Jordan Dennis. Guys, we'll see you next year.
Happy New Year.